Hey guys, welcome to the Overmatch Podcast. I'm your host, Kirsten, and I'm here today with Kate Smith, who is a clinical herbalist and holistic health coach. And we're going to talk about all things healing and natural healing specifically and how that differs from typical medicine, and as well as some entrepreneurship and all the things. So without further ado, thank you for being here, Kate.
Thank you so much, Kirsten.
So what people don't know is we just had to restart this podcast because I forgot to press record, which is not my first time of doing that. So anyways, let's go back to these questions we've already answered.
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, how you grew up and where you lived and just a little bit of your background.
Sure. So I grew up in Pine Bluff, North Carolina, which is not too far from where we're at right now in mm-hmm. West End. And I grew up the oldest of five siblings, and we were all homeschooled through, I was homeschooled third grade through 11th grade.
Third grade through 11th grade. Okay. Mm-hmm. And tell me about the difference in homeschooling compared to the few years that you spent in, I'm assuming, a public school, regular. Yeah.
So actually Christian school and final year of high school was also in a small private school. But yeah, it was definitely a rude awakening compared to how I had been raised up till that point, being both homeschooled and then even as a young teenager taking classes at a community college here and, you know, getting that socialization through other adults, through more mature, you know, people, and also through other kids who were homeschooled with similar values. You know, at the time, I thought I was missing out on so much. You know, I thought I was missing out on, you know, becoming a, you know, athlete at school or cheerleader or like all the clubs and all those things. And now looking back, I am just so incredibly grateful for the way my parents raised us.
That's awesome. Earlier you said that they really, the way your parents raised you as well as the way they educated you mm-hmm. was focused on your niche. And instead of just trying to make you great at everything, they recognize, okay, this is your passion. This is mm-hmm. where you excel versus how it kind of happens in normal schooling, mm-hmm. normal education, and you kind of have to know everything and be good at everything. Mm-hmm. How did that develop you over time? And do you think it made a difference for your current career choice?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And really, I think it was genius of my parents who were not trained in education. That's an interesting thing too, right? Like in the standard school system and even in higher education, you have these people who are trained in educating, not necessarily well-trained and skilled in the topic they're educating students on.
Right.
For example, even in higher ed, right, like a lot of your instructors are instructed in instructing. You know, it's not necessarily that they have these incredible backgrounds and they're, you know, mentors and people you can look up to who have been in the trenches of whatever it is right. that you're studying. Sometimes that's the case, but I would say 50% of the time it's not in with your instructors. Mm-hmm. So what my parents did, just as two normal people who, you know, had an intuition, I think, about this, was they said, okay, we're going to take our five kids and we're going to identify the things they're really good at and the things they're naturally skilled at and the things that make them excited, things they're passionate about, what's fun for them, right? Like, because I think fun is what drives learning and like we retain the things that we think are fun. I'm like that as an adult. So for me, you know, I was so passionate about and loved so much art and literature. So I was always drawing. I was always reading. I was always writing. I was creating poetry. You know, I was writing short stories. I was submitting things to, you know, local competitions and that sort of thing, you know, having little art shows. And my parents really fostered that. And they said, we don't care if you're average at everything else, you know, just hit the standard to be able to pass everything else. But I think by giving me so much freedom and the things that I truly loved, it increased my desire to want to learn and excel at other subjects. So of course, when I went off to college, like I was well prepared for that. And I think a lot of times kids who are homeschooled or even unschooled and go through that model, like life school, mm-hmm. are oftentimes more prepared than kids who have been forced through, you know, the regurgitation system of a lot of public schools.
What a great perspective. Did you get your degree in what you do now, or what is your degree in?
Yeah. So my degree is actually in journalism.
No way.
Yeah. So completely different than what I do now, mm-hmm. but it absolutely informs what I do now. And, you know, my perspective is that having such an emphasis on the things that I was skilled at, so art and literature and writing when I was young, and then studying journalism and creative writing when I was in college, really informed and encouraged my creativity and my sensitivity to the natural world, to my intuition, to natural healing, and to a divergent perspective, because creativity is all about divergent thinking. Mm. And I think that absolutely did, you know, open my mind a bit to learning later a holistic healing path that is so far outside of what's normal in our society.
Oh, awesome. You speak so elegantly. It's amazing. So you own your own company mm-hmm. called Made Whole Herbs. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that journey, how it developed, what suddenly gave you from a journalistic mm-hmm. upbringing educationally to now you want to help people holistically and to heal. What brought you there?
Okay, so this is a bit of a long story.
We got time.
Okay. All right. So the way it all started was when I was actually in college and I'm studying journalism. And I get a urinary tract infection. And I've had them before, right? Like most women have them at some point in their lives. And I had always been able to just get over them naturally, have never had to use medicine for them. You know, I would just drink a lot of water, maybe do some of those cranberry pills that you always see that are supposed to be great for, you know, urinary health, and be fine. Well, this UTI goes on and on for like 5-6 days. And then it's gone. And I'm not having any of the typical sensations you get with a UTI, you know, the burning and the urgency and all those things. And so the pain is gone from where I'm used to a UTI pain being, but I developed this pain in my back. And I don't know that that's where my kidneys are located, is in my low back area. That's where you feel kidney pain. I didn't know that at the time. So I think that I just hurt myself doing something. You know, I was in like a dance class at the time and I was like, maybe I just pulled something in my back. So I go on for a few more days like this, and I'm also feeling a little bit sick, and I'm not putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And one day I go to get out of bed, and I fell on the floor and blacked out and couldn't get up. And, you know, the guy that I was dating at the time, I called him when I kind of came to. He came and picked me up and took me to the hospital. When I went in and told them what was happening, you know, and say, I have this pain in my back, started as a UTI, they immediately know there's a septic kidney infection. And they're asking me my religion. And at that moment, it hit me like, oh, they think I might die.
Whoa.
Because they're thinking like, what kind of, you know, spiritual mm-hmm. provider do we have come in for this girl if she doesn't make it? Because I'm, you know, he's holding me, carries me into the emergency room, and I'm like in and out of consciousness. So I was in the hospital for over a week. And I was on IV antibiotics. I was on IV morphine because I wasn't getting better. They're doing all these additional scans and tests and, you know, tell me basically because it was a septic kidney infection, it so dramatically harmed my kidney health. It also hurt my liver. So my liver is inflamed and I'm not getting better. I was 21.
21.
Yeah. I was 21. And I'm in the hospital for a week. And thank God I made it out. But I had a couple doctors tell me that if I had waited another 24 hours, it would have killed me.
Wow.
It was that bad. That changed my body. After that, my body was I felt like permanently changed. So I went from having, you know, maybe 2 UTIs at other points in my life to now all of a sudden I'm getting them every couple months. I'm getting a UTI out of nowhere for no reason. I'm trying to do all the things that I know I'm supposed to do. And I keep getting these infections. And the thing is rather than being an uncomplicated UTI where you can just use Bactrim or, you know, wait it out, they turn into kidney infections within 12 hours. So I constantly have to be on these really high dose, you know, specific antibiotics. So I was on ciprofloxacin, you know, every couple months, which is broad spectrum antibiotic. And it is terrible for your joint health. It decimates your gut microbiome and bacteria. So then I'm having all these other issues from it. But I'm going on like this in college. I moved to Alaska after I graduated. And I was working for, again, totally different job than what I was educated in, but I was working for the Forest Service and I was doing trail work and wildland firefighting. So that was like kind of my dream job. So I spent a lot of time outside when I was in college. I went to school in Boone. You know, I camped a lot and backpacked, and it really woke me up to how much I love the outdoors. So pursued that job, got that job with no experience. So it was amazing. And I'm loving my life, but I'm getting these kidney infections every couple months. And it got to the point where rather than going to the doctor every single time to get an antibiotic because they would happen so quickly, my doctor was like, I'm just going to give you an open prescription for ciprofloxacin so you can go to the pharmacy whenever you want and have it filled and just take care of yourself. And at one point, Kirsten, I said to her, is there anything I can do to stop these from happening? Like, this seems like it's happening a lot. And she said, no, you permanently damaged your kidneys with what happened to you when you were in your early 20s. And this is just the way life is. And you'll have to be on antibiotics every couple months.
And you said, no way. There's got to be another way.
I honestly, I wish I was that bold. But at the time, I just believed her. And I went on like that for months. And after I had moved, you know. And it wasn't until I was on the phone with my grandma, my Meemaw, who's one of my role models and one of my heroes, and I'm telling her what's going on. And I had just kind of conceded to like being a medical patient for the rest of my life, as crazy as that sounds. And she goes, well, honey, have you ever thought about herbal medicine? And I was like, no, I don't really think anything as gentle and natural as a plant is going to help me when I need these antibiotics.
We really have a stigma in society about that.
Totally.
Don't we?
Totally.
Very much like a hippie.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And yeah, that's unfortunate because you are one of many people that I know that have used natural remedies to truly heal themselves. And they're there for a reason, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I believe that God put everything on this earth that we need to survive and thrive.
Yes.
I really believe that.
And that's not to say, because we've had a conversation like this before, that at times people may need something more.
Absolutely.
And, you know, God also created those minds to develop something to help people in serious situations. But that doesn't mean that holistic, natural remedies are also a possibility.
Totally. Yeah, completely agree. And I think that is a really helpful thing to bring up because people tend to be on the extremes, one side or the other.
Right.
Only Why can't modern we do medicine, both? Only holistic, energy healing, Reiki, herbal medicine, everything, you know, and it's like, it's like our political system, right? Like people are either on one extreme or the other and can't listen to the other person. I think the balance, as cliche as it sounds, is somewhere more in the middle.
Yes.
And thank God for modern medicine because I would have died without it and I never would have found this path. And it's interesting to me that, you know, what used to kill 50 to 80% of the population as far as viruses, infectious disease, you know, bacteria-borne, you know, issues, illnesses like this, more you know, traumatic illnesses and injuries and, you know, broken bones, that kind of thing, used to kill most of the population.
Yeah.
And now it hardly kills anybody. But now people are dying these slow deaths of chronic disease, chronic health conditions that are deteriorating their bodies and living much lower quality of life at the same time, and modern medicine has nothing for it. So now the thing that's killing most people is chronic diseases, metabolic issues, it's autoimmune conditions, it's diabetes, it's obesity, heart disease, and we don't have anything for it within the drug pyramid.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, my grandma asked me, have you ever tried herbal medicine? I totally had that stigma in my head. But she goes, well, honey, you have nothing else to lose.
Great point, Grandma.
Great point. Thank you, Meemaw. And I, because I'm very much a DIY person, I go to a bookstore locally, at least used to use bookstore, and I got a couple books on herbal healing and holistic healing. Herbal Medicine for Women's Health by Rosemary Gladstar, who's kind of the godmother of herbal medicine, and a book called The Boreal Herbal by Beverly Gray, which this book takes you through all these herbs, natural, you know, remedies in Alaska specifically, or in the Boreal Forest, which is Canada, Washington, some of Oregon, and tells you how to use them for different parts of your body and for your health. And I used these two books to go out and wildcraft the plants that these books said would help with kidneys, bladder, ureter. You know, the herbs that it mentioned were highbush cranberry, dandelion root, and spruce cone. And so I go harvest these, make medicine out of them in different ways. I'm making teas and tincture. I'm going to the, we had what's called brown jug in Alaska on every corner to these liquor stores.
Okay.
And I'm going and getting the strongest alcohol they have, you know, and I'm making tinctures out of these things.
Yeah.
And Kirsten, I went from having a kidney infection every couple months to not having another one for 4 years.
Wow.
It was almost like too good to be true while it was happening. And it, you know, when great things happen, sometimes you're just thinking this has got to be a fluke.
Yeah.
But then as years
and
years.
When's it all going to crash?
Exactly. Exactly. But I healed my body with plants, with natural medicine, with no background, with no medical history
right.
in this field, with no expertise. I think we're all designed to be able to do that.
So incredible realization with all this. And then what happens next? Give me this experience, we're truly life and death experience mm-hmm. to now you own your own company doing mm-hmm. the same thing for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's in between? Yeah. How do we get there?
Yeah. So I am convinced that every heartbreaking, tragic, painful thing we go through in life, God wants us to use it for good and wants us to use it to establish our own purpose. And in order to reproduce that healing and that wisdom, whatever that gem is,
yes.
in other people's lives and in other people's hearts. And I've been convinced of that since this happened to me, mm-hmm. because after I had this healing experience, I'm obsessed. Like, I'm thinking there's this world, like you're living in the Twilight Zone or something. There's this whole other world of healing that saved my life that I'd never heard of before, that mm-hmm. no one was talking about, that was so outside the box. And I, at the time, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to kind of go up the ladder with firefighting. I'm going to become a smoke jumper and hotshot. And I'm like actually physically training for these things. Mm-hmm. And this is my goal. And I just lost a lot of fire to do that. Mm. And all of my energy was redirected.
Pun intended.
And, right, right. But all my energy was redirected into natural healing. And how can I do this for my family, my friends, and maybe I'll even do this for other people. Maybe I can do this to help other people. And had no idea what it would turn into, but I was just obsessed and I had to follow that obsession. So I went to school online first when I was in Alaska. I, you know, started doing program through the Chestnut School of Herbal Medicine. And I was like, I just couldn't get enough. I'm reading all these books. I'm reading every blog I can find, mm-hmm. you know, teaching myself. And one year when I came back to visit North Carolina, I took my grandma's car and I went around to the herbal medicine schools that are in North Carolina, which there are a few. And I went to the Eclectic School of Herbal Medicine. And it's in Logap, North Carolina. It's on 500 acres. It's a year-long intensive, and they have a student clinic. And I went and sat in on one of their classes, and it was all about thyroid, specifically hypothyroidism, autoimmune, you know, Hashimoto's, which is exactly what my mom has and what so many of my aunts have. My grandma, it's all in my family on my mom's side, is autoimmune conditions. And it was like very serendipitous because it was something I was so captivated by, and the perspective the instructor was taking was very science-based and clinical-based, which I was very attracted to. I wasn't super interested in like Chinese medicine or Ayurveda or more of the energy healing aspects of it. I wanted to learn the hard science of it so that I could have some solid trust in it. And mm-hmm. also, so if I'm going to do this, you know, I can speak the language of modern medicine, which is so required in order to have a full healing experience with a person, right? Like, because like we were talking about before, you do need both oftentimes, mm-hmm. or you need at least a perspective of both.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I visited that school, and a couple days later, I gave them my deposit to come the next year. And I moved from Alaska to North Carolina, back to North Carolina, went to school there for a year, did their, you know, year-long intensive, their student clinic, graduated in 2020, the beginning
oh, wow.
of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that was an adventure in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I started my business in 2020 when
really?
COVID had everything shut down, and it was one of the best decisions ever.
And it was probably a great time because that is when you saw health go down the tubes.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I had, of course, there's different perspectives. 2020 is a terrible time, or it's the best time. And my perspective was, this is the best time, because what I'm witnessing is that all of a sudden people are getting sick. They're scared out of their minds. Mm-hmm. They're going to the doctor and
completely isolated.
Can't do anything for them.
Yeah.
Or very, very little for them. And the prognosis for them in the doctor's office, in the hospital, on a ventilator is equally, if not more poor than if mm-hmm. they are staying at home. And I'm seeing there's no answer. There's no cure.
Yeah, there's just fear mongering.
There's just fear. People are scared out of their minds, which is making them more sick. People are isolated, which is making them more sick. Mm-hmm. You know, loneliness kills more people and absolutely. Is more fatal to your health than they've now discovered that it's equal in impact to your health to smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, being obese, being completely sedentary.
Yeah, I'll tell you, lonely. I was still a police officer then with really? Charlotte, mm-hmm. and we had, and this was across the board, across the entire country, the suicide rates mm-hmm. and the attempted suicides, mm-hmm. they skyrocketed. We lost more people to that than we, in my opinion, than ever were affected by COVID. Mm-hmm. And not saying that COVID isn't a real thing, like obviously it was a serious issue, but the way that it was handled truly hurt especially our youth. Yeah. You would be amazed at how many young suicides, and I'm just one city. That's Charlotte's just one city. And even I actually was driving on the highway going to a briefing for something we were going to do, and I saw a guy on the bridge. And there was just mm-hmm. something that said, turn around. Mm-hmm. So I get off on the next exit, come back and get out with him. And that's exactly, thank God he gave me the push to turn around, because I normally wouldn't.
Wow.
And not because, just because he wasn't like on top of it. It wasn't obvious that that's what his plan was. He yeah. was just, it was there was just something about him, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. He was so isolated. Mm. He was having trouble with his children and work, and COVID shut down a lot of things that were hurting him financially, and he just didn't think it was worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was not an abnormal thing anymore, which was so sad. Mm-hmm. And anyways, that was a tangent, but yeah, I saw it firsthand in important. My line of work as well.
And thank God you listened to your gut, right? Like yeah. there's something that connected you to that other person, your shared humanity and mm-hmm. your sense, not only in your field and in your, you know, skill as a police officer, but also just your sense as an individual that something's off here, and you saved his life.
Yeah. Well, thank God you started your company then. And like you were saying earlier, I totally agree. I don't think we go through anything hard mm-hmm. for no reason, mm-hmm. because if we didn't go through whatever that was, we wouldn't have the empathy or understanding for mm-hmm. someone else who's going through that we can now maybe intervene with and help and mm-hmm. at least be a friend through whatever situation that is, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that you experienced that horrific life-threatening ordeal at 21 especially, and then now I can't even imagine how many people you have helped, which I'd love to get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell
yeah,
me obviously definitely. Like you can't give personal information or anything, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't ask you to, but tell me some of the stories that have happened since you started this. Oh, maybe goodness. One of the first ones that was really impactful.
Yeah. Yeah. What a good question. So yeah, I started my business in 2020, and it has grown so much to the point where now I do it full time, which I'm so grateful to be doing. I've worked with hundreds of people by now, and I have seen things that doctors will say are impossible. I think that's one of the most exciting things ever, is to defy a prognosis
right.
that someone's given. And, you know, you asked about stories. I would say, you know, a lot of my focus does go into autoimmune conditions. That's one of the things I specialize in. So I work with autoimmune conditions, hormonal health, and then your nervous system. So, you know, your mental health. Those are the big areas where I focus, and those are actually intricately interconnected.
So for people who aren't as well versed mm-hmm. in the medical field,
yeah,
explain more of what an autoimmune disease sure. looks like.
Yeah, I'll explain that, and then I can tell you some of the really amazing things that I've seen in people with autoimmune yeah. conditions to answer that question too. But so autoimmunity is when your body starts making antibodies to self. So rather than making antibodies to, you know, a virus, an infection, your body is making attackers, essentially immune attackers, to your own tissue. So for example, autoimmune hypothyroidism is when your body is making antibodies to your thyroid hormone itself and decimating that. So your natural thyroid hormone goes down because your body's actually killing it. It's something like, you know, multiple sclerosis, there are, you know, lesions in the, it's more of a central nervous system and autoimmune attack. So lesions in the brain and the spinal cord. You know, we've got rheumatoid arthritis, we've got lupus, Graves' disease, some of the common ones, type 1 diabetes, autoimmune attack on your pancreas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, killing your ability to actually make sufficient insulin. So these are really scary diseases where mm-hmm. the body is attacking itself. And these are relatively new in their predominance in the world. So we've seen a big rise in autoimmune conditions from the 70s and 80s. You know, before that, it was relatively unheard of. It's very, very rare. And now we've got 7 to 11%, depending on the study you look at, 7 to 11% of the population has an autoimmune condition. And wow. that rate is expected to rise.
Yeah, that's insane.
But some of the most amazing things I've witnessed within my practice are in people with autoimmune conditions, because there's not typically an expectation that you will ever go into remission. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's rare. It's rare that it happens with people. One of my favorite stories is when I had a client who had Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune attack on the thyroid. But unlike hypothyroidism, which slows your thyroid down, slows your metabolism down, you get tired and depressed and gain weight and lose your hair and, you know, constipated and all this stuff, it does the opposite thing to your thyroid. So it speeds your thyroid up. And this can be fatal because it increases your heart rate to the point where people, if untreated, typically die of cardiac arrest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it causes terrible anxiety. You're sweating. You can't sleep. You lose weight. Your eyes bulge. And I had a client, had quite a few clients actually with Graves' disease. And she wants to get off of her medication, methimazole, because she wants to get pregnant again. And you can't be on it. It causes birth defects if you're on it through your whole pregnancy. So she wants to get off. And I always tell people, if your doctor consents to you titrating down medication or getting off, then I will support you in that. But I don't ever tell people to get off their meds. Like, I can't do that as I'm not a licensed provider. But her doctor was also on board and said, you know, you do have to get off this and go into remission somehow in order to conceive. Said, you know, yeah, have somebody help you do that within a more natural field. I don't know how to do that, so have somebody else do it. This is her endocrinologist. And
which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which is awesome that doctor really had her back and stuff.
Definitely. Definitely. Because, you know, her doctor knew this was really important to her. She wanted to have another child. So she reaches out to me, and she was doing 90% of the things right already, which was great. Made our work together so much easier. But she needed somebody to help her get to that 100%. And it was worth it to her to invest in that. And I helped her get to that 100% of supporting her body, supporting her liver health, helping to slow down her thyroid naturally. And we worked together for several weeks, and she was able to, over time, titrate down and then completely get off of the methimazole in order to conceive. And I cannot wait to meet her little miracle baby. Like, that's how I feel about it. So
she's in total remission.
Yes. Yep.
And how long did that take?
So we worked together for a bit of a shorter time. It was 2 months that we were together. And then we continued to do follow-ups over time every month as she's going into her endocrinologist. She's having the blood work done. And she told me back in January that she was off. So
that's incredible.
Period of time. It can take some time. I want to say with her, 7 months. So it can take some time, but, you know, when you think about the fact that she's been on these meds for 12 years,
right.
And every doctor will say it is impossible to get to a place where you can be off, that's astonishing to me. I've had people with stage 4 chronic kidney disease with a GFR in the 20s and 30s, and doctors will say to you, you can't get that back up. You can't heal your kidneys and you know, renew them. And I've had people with a GFR in the 30s be able to get up into the 60s and climb, which is a blood metric that indicates the health of your kidneys.
Okay.
So I've had people who have totally defied the prognosis of doctors. And then I've had people, I think the subjective experiences people have been just as valuable. You know, people who say to me when we first start working together, I just want to be able to work out again, to hike, to spend time with my kids, to have a clear mind when I'm at work, to be able to actually pursue the things that I'm excited about and passionate about. And I can't do any of these things because I'm in so much pain. My brain fog's so bad. My gut hurts all the time. You know, my hormones are shot. You know, I'm exhausted constantly. And over a period of 3 or 4 months, you know, them on the other side of that saying, I feel like my old self, and I also feel like a new person at the same time, and being able to completely heal themselves naturally.
Mm.
That to me is just as exciting as someone who gets off their meds, sees their blood work improve, and, you know, defies those more objective measures. The subjective is just as important.
That's incredible. That's got to be so rewarding.
It's so rewarding. It's addicting.
Yeah,
it's addicting to see.
Yeah, yeah, for me, it's when I will train somebody and they're so scared or so intimidated or nervous and just have no confidence whatsoever. And then by the end of it, they're just empowered and they have this confidence and they just walk and hold themselves differently. Like, I mean, it's the best feeling. Mm-hmm. That's totally why I do it too.
And as someone who's trained with you and witnessed you training and in that setting, I can 100% say that happens every time, doesn't it?
Well, thank you.
You have people in who have never touched a firearm before, not even a semunitions device, and they're shaking when they're holding that gun. And your professionalism, your calmness and your peace that you bring to them while also giving them this sense that you've got it, it's going to be okay. Like, you are the master here, professional. You're not going to let them hurt themselves or anybody else. I can just see that ease come over them. And then you make it fun. And like we were talking about before, if it's fun, then you learn it and it sticks.
Yes.
You know? So you do that too. So Kirsten,
thank you.
You're a master in your craft as well.
Well, thank you. What is the, from all of the things that you've learned through this process and everything, what is the thing that maybe would shock people that is natural and holistic, but, you know, it just works?
So would you give me an example of maybe a body system?
Okay, let's talk about mental health, because that is a huge problem in our society right now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, from a policing standpoint, it drastically declined during COVID, and I haven't seen it get better since. And, you know, with active shootings and all of the mass murder stuff, that is, in my opinion, from experience as well, that is a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. And to combat that is very complicated from a government standpoint, because you can't just lock somebody up for one little thing here or there, right? But if a family member notices something, because in every single active shooting, someone knew something was off. Someone saw a change, whether it was obsession with firearms that wasn't there before, dark kind of things that they're watching on YouTube or things like that. They're saying things that are darker. And obviously that's an extreme example, but for someone who maybe just wants to help that person in their lives, or maybe it's something that it's just their child is very depressed and suicidal, or, you know, anxiety is through the roof. Like, what would be the thing that a parent or friend or significant other, what is that thing? I'm sure there's multiple things, but like, give me just one at least.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I could give so many. So first of all, I feel like I can't understate the power of therapy, especially with a really good counselor, a good therapist who is an objective third party who can talk to this person and identify what's going on beneath the surface. Because I can imagine, and from the research, we see that every mental disorder that then turns into violent crime, that person has an unmet need at some point in their life. And I want to say most mental health concerns, there's an unmet need that then is manifesting into this disorder. You know, you look at the history of and the background of the people who have committed the worst crimes, and what they experienced in their life, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, the emotional abuse, you know, the bullying, all these things. And of course, I'm not saying they're justified in their actions mm-hmm. whatsoever. We all have a choice.
Absolutely. You know,
we all, I'm sure most of us in this country have experienced one of those three major types of abuse. Mm-hmm. And most of us aren't taking actions like this. So we all right. have a choice. But I think someone coming in as a third party and talking through it with a person, the impact of that can be life-saving. Mm. Empathy and love from family members and friends can be life-saving. As far as the work that I do in health coaching and nutrition, natural things that people can do, let's say maybe for just mental health in general and not mm-hmm. necessarily for these more severe, you know, mental health disorders that are then going into violent crime.
Right.
Though, of course, like if these things were instituted, maybe things wouldn't progress to the level that they do with some of our worst instances. But, you know, the simple things that really, really work, and I can say from experience, really work for your mental health, are so easy and they're free. And it's really going back into the rhythm that your body expects and the environment that your genes demand. So it's going back to the way that your body wants to operate, which is close to the natural world. And I know that might sound a bit like an extreme statement, like, oh, we can all help our mental health and our minds by getting closer to nature, but it's true and it's verified in the research. So things like sunlight all throughout the day, but morning sunlight, critical for your circadian rhythm, your ability to actually get quality sleep at night, which is where your mind heals itself primarily. Getting afternoon sunlight, you're getting a different spectrum of UV and UVA and UVB, which is then, you know, stimulating your vitamin D production, just helping your energy and your mitochondria and your sex hormones. And these things are going to help you feel better in your mind. There's different light spectrums that are going to impact your gut health and the microbiome that you've got, which are then your gut's making 90% of your serotonin, 50% of your dopamine. So you think about the impact of sunlight just on your gut. And then of course, food and all kinds of other things on your gut health, how that helps your mind. But sunlight is huge. Mm. It's huge. They used to, in this country and all over the world, they used to take people with mental health issues and even physical health issues that doctors couldn't figure out. And what did they do? I mean, I remember, my grandma remembers, in America, they used to say, we can't figure this out. Your mind is killing you and your body is following suit. Go spend a summer on the ocean. Like, go spend, you know, the fall in the mountain air.
Yeah.
And people come back better. And I'm not saying everything is that simple, of course. Yeah. Like, we gotta consider the role of trauma and emotional pain and psychological disorder. You know, sometimes that is the case in people who have mental health concerns. But it's astonishing to me that now it's like out of every two high school students has anxiety or depression. Mm-hmm. You know, that's astonishing. That is worse than we've ever seen it. And what do we also see corresponding with that is people spend 90% of their time indoors. People spend 3 to 4 hours a day on their screens. People have these external stressors that they feel they need to meet from society or employers or working a job they hate and, you know, disconnection to their own intuition and definitely from the natural world. And again, I'm not trying to oversimplify it because mental health can be fatal if it's not taken care of. And sometimes there is a role of medications that's critical, but sunlight and being close to nature, earthing or grounding, having your bare feet on the ground. So there's these negative electrons in the soles of the earth that then enter in through, or I'm sorry, the surface of the earth that enter in through the soles of your feet and neutralize your free radicals in your body, which are the major causes of inflammation. So you actually, there's been studies done on people's inflammatory response, either standing on the earth with shoes on or standing on the earth with bare feet. And it's going to knock down your inflammation just to stand on the earth with your bare feet. So simple. But why do people feel so good and sleep so much better when they go spend a week on the beach? They're usually walking around barefoot and they're getting lots of sunshine. Like, these things actually work. So sunlight, you know, bare feet on the ground, wow. Natural world, you know, and then things like really prioritizing and protecting your sleep, you know, not giving into peer pressure to do the things that we typically think of as, you know, helping us temporarily in our mental health, like drinking,
alcohol, going, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that's societally accepted that mm-hmm. then makes things so much worse.
Yeah, it's literally a depressant.
It is. And
we're using it to not be depressed.
And we accept
what?
That. Yeah, we accept that.
Yeah.
And we almost encourage it.
Yes.
And we create little community around it.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
It is.
It's backward.
I know, I'm sure in the military as well, but in policing, it's definitely an issue because mm-hmm. obviously there's a lot of trauma there, and there is the camaraderie of wanting to just, you know, go hang out and be together. And then that starts, and it's just, it can be a vicious cycle if you aren't aware of it.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And alcohol, like you said, it's a depressant, it's a central nervous system depressant. And one of the things that it does is it changes your brain. It actually physically changes your brain and causes a change in what you see as stressful. It actually lowers your tolerance to stressors and to traumatic events over time. And
can that ever be reversed?
It absolutely can.
It can.
It can. Okay. It also changes, one of the ways that it works as well, is it does change your baseline dopamine and serotonin too. So then it makes you feel more reliant on it because it's actually decreasing your serotonin and your dopamine while you're drinking it. And then you go to it again to kind of get a little boost again. That definitely can be reversed. It takes a period of time of abstinence. And of course, if someone's got alcohol use disorder or they're using it too much, then it's very important to do that either with help or very slowly titrate down, because of course it can be fatal to just quit cold turkey.
What do you think? Because in society, I mean, like you said, it's marketed and in entertainment and it's like, that's the social thing to do. What is too much based off of your knowledge and training in the physical body?
People are going to hate this so much.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm asking.
So the research shows that you start to see physical changes to the brain and damage to your immune system. Sometimes it's irreparable with more than 1 to 2 drinks a week.
More than one what?
1 to 2 drinks a week.
A week.
A week.
Wow.
A week. Yep. So if you want to enjoy alcohol and also keep your physical health, your mental health, and your immune health and your longevity, I'm telling you, people are going to hate this. But the research shows, meta-analysis of hundreds of scientific studies show that 1 to 2 drinks a week is really the max you can get away with. And that's like typically 1 for women, 2 for men, which nobody wants to hear.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's insane.
It's unfortunate, right?
Yeah. And that is not society.
No, it's not.
That is not what society does right now.
Yeah.
Okay, gut health.
Mm-hmm.
Let's define that.
Okay.
What is gut health? Why does it matter so much? Mm-hmm. And what can somebody do to just one simple thing? Like if they're not ready to just totally change everything in their lives, what is one simple thing that they could do to benefit their gut health?
Yeah. Gut health's a really hot topic. And I feel like has been for a little bit here. But I think about gut health as is important. So why does it matter? And it matters because your gut is where you are assimilating the nutrients that then make up your own cells and make up you. This is where you are getting everything that's going to restore your body, is where you're ingesting the things that are going to restore your body. Of course, there are things in our environment, our air, our sun exposures, our, you know, the things that we're breathing in, actually like bacteria, even from people and animals and plants, that then changes our internal, you know, organs as well. But our food is huge. So nutrient assimilation is so important. And the things that are going to affect our gut health are really the big things I think about: your stomach acid, your gut microbiome. So the bacteria, virus, fungi, archaea that live inside of you, and the health of your intestinal lining. So these are the big things that determine how much nutrition you're actually getting from the food that you eat and what it's doing. So those little bacteria are determining what that nutrition does. And if you have an overabundance of like the quote unquote bad guys, you could be eating the best diet in the world and you're constantly inflamed and you've got small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and you're bloated and, you know, your bowel movements are terrible and your stomach hurts all the time. Or if you have a population of a lot of the good guy bacteria, then you can eat a diet that's maybe not as great, you know, it's maybe more of an 80-20, it's not 100%, and you are benefiting from it because those good bacteria are on your side and they're actually increasing your metabolic health and they're speeding up your metabolism and you're not gaining weight from the same thing someone else eating the same diet who has bad bacteria in their gut are going to be gaining. You know, there's your gut bacteria is big and you've got this little army of things that could be for you or against you. But what can you do to improve your gut health? So really simple things. Again, one of the first things that I would have someone do for their gut health is to slow down around mealtime. Sounds so simple, right? But actually going into a parasympathetic state before you eat is going to be really important. So getting your body into that rest and digest parasympathetic side, we spend so much of our time in sympathetic where we're fight or flight, which is going to push all the stomach acid, or it's going to deplete our stomach acid. It's going to push all our energy away from our gut and into our hands, our feet, our head. And we can't digest as well when we're in that state. And we also develop food sensitivities and allergies if we eat all the time in that state because our stomach acid's so depleted. Things are then going into our intestinal tract, undigested, breaking through that intestinal wall and triggering antibody response. And people literally will develop sensitivities and allergies just by eating food when they're stressed all the time. It happened. So to slow down is so important. So slowing down before you eat.
I'm just thinking about all the years I ate as a cop, like trying to shove it down my throat before
Totally.
That may not be the best words to use. I always say stuff like that. But you know what I'm saying. Like I having to eat very quickly.
Yes.
Before going to the next call or on the way to the next call or whatever. I'm basically doing everything wrong.
Well, I don't want anybody to feel like that. There's just always room to, the way I think about it is always room to challenge yourself to create a lifestyle and an environment that's more aligned with who you would have been a few hundred years ago, even, you know, just more aligned with what your body is actually adept at doing and what your mind's adept at doing. So really, I think about it as you're not doing everything wrong. It's just how can we do things more ancestrally? And a lot of times that's the answer, right? Like slower pace of life for sure is going to help with that. But yeah, slowing down around meals, just chewing your food, putting in one bite of food, chewing it completely, swallowing it, that's going to help your stomach acid. You're going to be able to better digest that food. It's going to help your gut microbiome. You're going to get more nutrition from that food, and you won't deal with things that a lot of times people eventually deal with when they eat when they're under chronic stress, which is, why am I so fit? And like, or why am I working out so much? My diet's so clean, and yet I am getting a belly. Like, what the heck is going on here? You know, like what? A lot of times that purely is just a digestive issue. You're not actually assimilating nutrients. Your body is in that stress response, that fight or flight. And cortisol does a whole lot of other things in our body that can contribute to body composition. But that's one of them. That's the first thing I would tell somebody.
This
slow
is
down.
Stressing me out.
Sorry. Sorry, Kirsten. Not the goal. Not the goal at all.
No, I know. It's just that, yes, this is very informative. So how do you live that out in your daily life? How are you able to – because that is not what society pushes on you right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And some careers are a little bit harder to be able to do some of this with. But, you know, society's like go, 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 go and never stop. And then if you do have a moment to stop, then we have this crap in our face all the time because we have to be stimulated. Mm-hmm. And now we're not just stimulated. We're overstimulated all the time. Mm-hmm. So how?
Yeah.
How do you do it? Because I know you're an avid worker. What am I trying to say? You work out a lot. What the hell? What am I trying to say? You know, you work out a lot. The physical body is a big thing for you. And that's always been a big thing for me. That's that helps me mentally more than anything, I think.
Same.
You love being outside on the beach. You're always on the beach. I know you live this through that, but what else, you know, what does your diet look like? What is your probably lack of drinking look like, you know?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I do just also want to say that I've been on this journey for years. And mm-hmm. so what it looks like for me and what I'm working on right now is going to be different than someone who's just starting out. And that's good. And that's okay. If you had thrown all these things at me when, you know, back in what year was it? 2016, when I was having all of my issues and I just found out about herbal medicine and was using plants to heal myself, I would have been like, this is stressing me out too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, baby steps is what I do with all my clients, baby steps. What I do right now is I do have to be really mindful, especially about my nutrition, not necessarily what I'm eating, but actually, I guess the reason that the first thing I mentioned was getting into parasympathetic state before eating is because that's hard for me. That doesn't come naturally to me. Mm. You know, actually being able to slow down and focus only on eating and make eating a pleasurable experience rather than just a chore.
Something you have to do.
Typically how I think about it is like it's a chore. And as someone who loves to work out and does have a bit of, you know, higher macros that I need to meet than I would if I wasn't so active, you know, I'm constantly thinking about hitting my all
getting
my
enough
different
calories,
grows,
getting enough protein.
Yeah, all my goals
yes.
there.
I've said a million times to mm-hmm. friends and Kevin and Tula, mm-hmm. if I could just take a pill to get the nutrients I need, I would do it because eating is just a chore for me. I'm not someone who enjoys it.
Kirsten,
and
I'm
some
the same.
People are like, you're who are you? Like, that's so yeah. weird. But I would, if I could take a pill, I mm-hmm. would do it because I just would rather be able to keep going, which mm-hmm. is obviously the exact opposite of what I should be doing.
So, but I think this is good we're having this conversation because I'm the exact same way.
Mm.
Like it feels like a chore to me.
Mm.
And now, you know, I live by myself. So I'm cooking, meal prepping for just me. And when it's just you that you're taking care of, there's not as much love in it. It's hard to develop,
absolutely.
I should say. It's hard to develop as much love in it. You have to be so intentional about it and have to make it fun. Again, mm-hmm. it all comes back to like making something fun. So you want to do it. But yeah, my natural self is I just want to like hold my nose and eat chicken and rice mm-hmm. because it's easy and it's quick and I don't really love cooking for just me. So how do I live it out in my life? It's not easy. It's not easy. It's a challenge for me. It really is.
This and it's
is
back not, to it's a choice.
Yes. And this does not come naturally to me. And I think a lot of people assume that if you're healthy or you're living a pretty healthy lifestyle, you're just lucky and you're born that way and you naturally gravitate to that stuff. When it comes to food and eating, kind of doing self-care with eating and actually digesting my nutrients and eating enough, that does not come naturally to me. So yeah, how do I live it out? I have to protect my eating periods like my life depends on it. Mm. Like I have to get up early and be in a parasympathetic state when I eat my breakfast in order to actually eat enough and get through it and digest it well and not have stomach pain afterward. Just honestly, I have to take a lunch break in the middle of the day. And even though I work from home and I work remotely, and a lot of times there's that part of me that's very driven and hardworking that's like, no, I just want to push through it. I want to take clients during this time. I want to pack my day out. I have to take that time out, that hour out, and get myself into a parasympathetic state and eat. I have to meal prep every weekend and make something that I look forward to eating, or I will just eat the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't come naturally to me. And maybe that's like not super sexy for people to hear. Like they mm-hmm. think like, oh, you should just have this figured out. It's hard. Like yeah. I still struggle with this. I've been doing this for a really long time. I'm not completely like sober, you know. I just had my first drink in 6 months.
Wow.
You know, and it's not because I was like, there was no real decision there. Mm-hmm. I had a drink at New Year's because I was out at a, you know, celebrating. And then, you know, I had a drink the other night. And I was like, well, this is my first one. I had a 5-ounce beer. So the smallest one you can get. But it's because I know I'm really sensitive to it. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I use this in order to boost my mood, I'm getting myself into a vicious cycle. And I have to be really protective of myself in that way. And only drink when I really want to. Mm-hmm. When I want to, when I'm happy, when I'm uplifted, when I'm not using it as a crutch, when I'm not using it as a social lubricant, when I feel comfortable with the person I'm with, and I really want to, and I think that sounds like good and that would taste good, then I'll do it. But it's listening to my intuition there. And, you know, And maybe it won't, maybe it'll be another 6 months, maybe it'll be a couple months, but yeah, it's more of a special occasions kind of thing.
So why do you think healing is unpopular?
Yeah.
In your opinion, is that what you, how you see it in society?
I do.
And why do you think that is?
I really do. I think it's very popular to have arrived, right? Like we have all these heroes and icons and role models. And we want
it immediate, right?
We want it. Like our heroes are, they're so fit, they're sexy, they're beautiful, they're intelligent, they're witty, they're funny, they're smart. We want to be there so bad, but it's very unpopular to do the things that it actually takes to get there. And I think it's very triggering for people to realize that every person that you look up to, every person that you idolize had to work their butt off to get there. Mm-hmm. It's triggering because you realize they're just as ordinary and quote unquote normal as you are and as I am, but they worked really hard and you have that same potential within you. And it's a choice. It's a choice to pursue that. I'm not saying everybody's going to be Michael Jordan whatsoever, but it's a choice. Your life right now, it's sobering for me to think about too, because I mean, of course, there are parts of my life where I'm like, I've got so much farther to go. But your life right now is the result of the choices that you've made and the decisions that you've made. And we absolutely have all undergone things that have been out of our control and have hurt us, sometimes debilitated us, but we always have a choice. Like, I believe that completely. We always have a choice in what we do with it, how we respond to it, and what our life looks like after that. So the things that it takes to heal, to get to that ideal state, are very unpopular. Going to bed early, training, you know, spending an hour in the gym a day instead of, you know, watching Netflix or whatever, like doing even the low intensity things, like within the, you know, a lot of the, like the athlete or more, some more of the extreme athlete community who more like bro science community is very unpopular to do things like walking, you know? So it's going to be from either end. You're going to get it from either end that it's going to be unpopular, right?
Right.
So, you know, walking, spending time outside. Yeah. Being very protective of your sleep, eating well, you know, preparing your meals at home and not eating out 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think a lot and talk a lot with my clients about your metaphysical diet too. So not contributing and participating in just junk diet, like gossip and being so consumed by what's going on your favorite, you know, news channel and what the perspective is there and being eaten alive by anxiety and fear or even anger about what's going on that you can't control, you know, the music that you listen to, the people that you follow on social media, the things that you read, like these things affect you equally, if not more so, than all of the physical things that we input into our bodies. And it's very unpopular to abstain from a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? But what are the consequences? Like, what do you get from it? It's like, man, I have a body I'm in control of. I feel very confident. I like what I see when I look in the mirror. I operate through the day with strength and integrity and grace. And then I'm affecting the next generation, like my kids or grandkids or even nieces and nephews, my siblings, my parents. You are changing your family history by healing and doing the unpopular things to get there.
That's a powerful statement. That's a powerful statement. We're about out of time. If you could share one thing that all few thousand people who listen to this could hear, but if there was one thing that you wanted to get across, maybe the most important thing to you, it can be anything from this to a specific thing to do to a thought process. I mean, the world is your oyster. What would it be? Go ahead.
Mm. If I could say one thing to people, it would be that your body is for you. You are made to heal yourself. It's the way you were designed. Vinny agrees. Yes. It's the way you were designed. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about it. You get a cut. What does your body do? It heals itself.
Heals it.
You break a bone. Yeah, you might need a doctor to come set it. The doctor doesn't heal it. Your body heals itself. Mm. If it's aligned, if those bones are aligned. You get a cold. typically those things are self-limiting. Why? Because your body is healing you. Your immune system is healing you. Your body is designed to heal yourself. It does not matter what is going on. It doesn't matter what disease you have. Someone out there has healed it themselves, healed it naturally. It doesn't matter if it's cancer. It doesn't matter if it's a terminal illness. Anything can be healed. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be everybody's path, and I can't promise that for everybody, but your body is made to heal itself. And sometimes that healing is different than a state of optimal health. Sometimes that healing is the internal healing, the emotional healing, the psychological healing that makes you love the life that you're in, even if your body is still under the curse, as we would say, you know? So
perspective.
Yeah. But you are made to heal yourself, and your body wants that for you. All you need are the right tools to get there. All you need is the right environment, nutrition to get there, and it will reward you if you give it that.
This has been incredibly enlightening. You are so genuine and such an awesome person. I'm thankful that you are in my life. And where can people find you if they want to reach out to you for help or follow you on Instagram or whatever?
Thank you so much, Kirsten. I feel the same way. And this has just been such a gift to be able to talk with you. So my website is madewholeherbs.com. My Instagram is also madewholeherbs, and I share a lot of free resources and content there. And so if you would like to get up with me, send me a DM on Instagram, or you know, you can find my email address on my website if you'd like to email me, but would love to talk, love to hear what you think, love to answer any questions.
Yes, this has been great. Thank you so much, Kate. And I've certainly learned a lot even just from this past hour with you. So
thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you guys for listening to the Overmatch podcast. We'll see you next time.